This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
To a large extent, actually, one person has been quite rightly responsible for that. I was saying that somebody said, I was reading somewhere in the New York Times that he's talking about the tariffs in particular, which used to be governed by something called the World Trade Organization, which now belongs in a museum somewhere, but that he's created a new world order, although I think it's more like a trick order, you know? And so really he's using tariffs as an amazingly sort of effective, I suppose, if you want to put it like that, from his own perspective, an effective tool or weapon to like bludgeon people into submission. You know, it's been quite remarkable to see all these countries forced basically to kowtow. No one has really... Okay, the Chinese sort of resisted for a while, but and I think maybe it's more like a mutual kind of deal. But for the rest of us, it's like just you do it all, or you get massive tariffs. You know, nobody wants to be cut out of the U.S. market, so it is quite extraordinary.
Well, I mean,
and so that in turn has shifted like the kind of alliances in the world as well, with Trump moving closer to Putin, although now moving further away. Everything just seems to be, you know, the whim of Trump, you know?
There are people who tell me that the tariff regimen, if it is quote-unquote successfully implemented by the Trump administration through its agreements or its unilateral decisions, will to a considerable degree give us a world in which the tariff regimen will resemble where it was in 1930 with the imposition of the Smoot-Hawley tariffs in the United States against exporters into America. And we all should remember from our history lessons what that led to.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm not, to be honest with you, an expert on economics. And so I've also read that, and that seems to be the prevailing view. But there's also some people say somebody's making a lot of noise on this, but no. There's who say that the U.S. economy is very different from the way it was then. And so the effects will be different, but we're going to have to wait and see. But certainly, what is for me quite difficult is to imagine how anybody operates in this world, because you don't know any exporter, you know, anybody in the trade game, because you don't know what's coming up next. You know, it's impossible to. It might settle down after the latest round of tariffs kicks in. We now have an extension of a week again. But it's hard to tell, you know, it's hard to say.
I mean, what I understand about business, unfortunately, I've not had to do it but what I understand is that business people, exporters or manufacturers, it's not so much that they worry about the cost of exporting, it's that they can't figure out what the cost is going to be and that the uncertainties are so big that they give up and move on to something else.
Yeah, you see, what I'm also not sure of, you know, when you like, I mean, I did this piece for the Maverick, you know, print edition yesterday, trying to figure out what this would all cost us. And it's really difficult to say, you know, 30% tariff doesn't tell you how much you're going to lose from in the end, because, you know, there are all kinds of sort of permutations like your relative tariff to your competitors and so on. I was talking to a senior sort of Cape official the other day who said, he was talking to one of the citrus growers, and citrus exports from here are a big deal. South Africa is the second biggest citrus exporter in the world. And he said, he's not so worried because he thinks that this producer, the competitors, we'll be all right. But I don't know, I think with a 30% tariff, the problem is that all that's very big relatively, apart from what it was before, and that to me is potentially very damaging.
I mean, you know, if you think of it, if you think of it in those terms, the problem then becomes comparative cost, comparative advantage.
Yeah.
Does Brazil export more oranges than it already does? Does Chile and Argentina, Australia, and New Zealand perhaps export more wine than they did taking up what share of market South Africa has? Do companies that make cars here and export them to the U.S., and people and companies do that, we have to remember, do they simply say, it's not worth the trouble, we'll just shift our production lines to South yeah. Carolina or Munich or wherever?
Yeah, you know, rather ominously, the Mercedes-Benz plant in East London closed for the month of July. Now, they say it was had something to do with maintenance or whatever, but the timing was quite alarming, you know. And okay, they did reopen. They reopened yesterday, I think. But that is the question, you know. These margins are fairly sort of narrow on interest on tariff rates. It could very easily, any of these companies that we've been relying so heavily on, could just up sticks and move. You know?
I mean, the cautionary tale, of course, is the textile industry that used to be in Cape Town that moved and then moved, eventually ended up in Lesotho, and now may, in fact, have disappeared from there as well, as a result of these uncertainties and tariff up and downs.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Let me shift your attention to global geopolitics, which is really right up at your main course. You spent some time recently in Eastern Europe. Where is this going? Is this going to end with the triumphal march of the Russian army through the streets of Kiev, or is this eventually going to head to a negotiated settlement, or is your crystal ball so murky that you can't tell us?
Yeah, I'm afraid of both general topics. We discussing the murk is stronger than anything else. Yeah, look, I think it's going to have to end with negotiations. I don't think. Somehow, and I hope I'm wrong, I hope I'm right, but that Putin will march through the streets of Kiev. You know, it seems to me that you could almost say that the Western aid to Ukraine is designed to sustain the status quo, you know, like an impasse. I think it would be, unless he puts in such a huge, big attack and nobody's really got the courage or the, you know, would come to stop him. But I think that war is going to drag on for a while, and eventually maybe some kind of a peace will be agreed, where I'm afraid Ukraine would probably have to, you know, concede territory. The east, you know, the four provinces that it occupies or largely occupies at the moment. So that's kind of sad in a way, but not as bad, of course, as losing the whole country.
Now, there have been discussions really since the war began about the Russian assets, financial monetary assets held abroad that largely are now being held in escrow. And I see enormous numbers that we're talking about, and arguments are that this money should be diverted to paying for Ukraine's defense.
Weaponry,
or reconstruction post. Is that being discussed actively now? I mean, academics have written about. I wrote about it a couple of years ago as a possibility. Is this now beginning to be a real topic of discussion?
You know, I've also seen it being discussed, and it seems to go in kind of in peaks and. You know, valleys. It doesn't seem to me that very active at the moment. And there seems to be a concern that if that happens, then, you know, it's all bets are off the table and anybody can just seize anybody else's money abroad. I think what is happening is some of the interest rates on that money is being used. That's my understanding. But there's been also discussion about seizing the capital, you know? And that's, I don't think that has actually happened. And I don't think there's been an absolute consensus amongst, you know, Ukraine's allies to do that, as far as I know.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's it. I haven't seen anything recently. I might have missed it.
Yeah, well, the interest, even by itself, is a fairly considerable amount of money. If we're talking mortgages at like $500 billion worth of assets, that's I could profit. I could easily live off the interest of that, I think.
Yeah, it is big numbers.
I mean, how many yachts do you need, for goodness sake? But now, I mean, the last part of this quickly, because I know you have to go and we do too eventually. The South African response to these issues in Ukraine and perhaps more broadly, the government keeps speaking about itself as being cruel but sympathetic. It's non-aligned, and yet it's partnering with Russia in a number of forums. Is there movement in this, or is this solidifying into just a sort of a rote repetition of that formula?
Yeah, I don't think it's changing. And it seems to be pretty much the position. I mean, you know, the problem is that the non-alignment is not really a non-alignment, in my view. It's clear that they have more sympathy for Russia. They don't lack sympathy for Ukraine, and you know, they participate in the peace, Ukrainian peace talks and so on. But, you know, you just look at the last BRICS summit. The declaration was basically condemning Ukraine for attacking Russia, can you believe? Because there was some isolated little incident. And absolutely nothing said about, you know, the sort of sustained massive attacks of Russia on Ukraine. So, you know... South Africa, I don't think South Africa is capable of changing its position there. Ukraine was quite keen to change, to get a better relationship with South Africa, and it has to some degree succeeded in doing that.
And I want to ask you a great deal more about South Africa's views on the Middle East, but I'm afraid we're going to have to postpone that to another time. Second guest waiting, and I do appreciate your graciously stepping in at the last minute. In spite of the almost insurmountable communications issues.
Okay, sure. Okay. Cheers, man.
You take care. Have a good weekend, Peter.
You too.
Bye-bye.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Okay, we are live. We are back. To listeners, I apologize for the communications near chaos, but that live radio is like that sometimes, folks. We can't help it. If something didn't work, we try something else, and eventually... we were close to having two tin cans and a string to make that first conversation work, but fortunately we managed to get most of it. But the second half of our show today, I want to talk to I want to talk to Keith Engel of the South African Institute of Taxation. He's the CEO there. And I think I'm right in saying this. Please correct me, Keith, if I'm wrong. You are also a fellow native New Jerseyite. Is that right?
I'm a New Yorker. You come from New Jersey. Okay. So I originally am from New York. That's right.
Okay. Well, it's close, folks. It's close. You can see New York City from New Jersey in some places. Anyway, the reason why we're talking to you, Keith, is I think is pretty transcendently obvious. There is a new tax regime in town, and the new tax regime comes with the label tariffs at 30%. And my question to you really is, and I'll let you expand on it as long as you think you can help us. Okay. The South African government response to this
this threat, this sword of Damocles that's been hanging out for 5-6 months seemed a little bit, how should we say, slow and behind the curve and rather reactive rather than proactive. It was only in the last couple of days that anywhere in the public that you saw any indication from the government that they had a plan to tell what they would do with the Trump administration and hope for the best rather than simply just take the punches and roll with it. Am I being unfair or am I about there?
Well, it appears to be. I mean, I'm part of the public, so I what I see is I think that's what most people would feel. I think part of the problem is this tariffs here are not just being posed because of economic issues. They're being imposed because of political issues. And what the Trump administration wants from the ANC really doesn't want to give. So I think that's part of the reason we were scuttling around. The politics has got mixed up with the trade, but we can step back and take it a step at a time from there.
Well, let's do that. Let's separate the two halves. The tariffs as tariffs were the Trump administration. Donald Trump, unreasonably perhaps, seems to think that tariffs are the appropriate way to conduct international economic relations, also the appropriate way to finance government deficits, and also to give mechanisms to lower taxes in other categories of taxes. And somewhere along the way, you know, I'll be uncharitable and say Donald didn't pay attention to that lecture on tariffs and government budgets because of the way they actually work and who actually has to pay for them. Yeah. But is his strategy, is it coherent, even if it isn't the appropriate way to do it? Does it hang together, or is it just more real estate broker dancing and shuffling? I guess I'm trying to think of a metaphor for this.
Well, I would argue is that it's a different form of coherency. So bottom line is if you're a traditional economist or you're a traditional insider from government, we've pushed for over the years a free trade world where we're lowering tariffs across the world, and tariffs were seen as a bad thing. And that's been going on for about 100 years now. Now he comes back and he looks at this, and as you said, one, you know, prior to 1913, the United States didn't have an Income Tax Act. So all they had was raising revenue by tariffs. And his hatred of the Income Tax Act, he had some sort of vain hope that if you put tariffs across the world, you can bring the world back to pre-1913, and therefore you can lower taxes while adding tariffs instead. And he seems to think that tariffs ultimately are good, even though people pay for it. It means maybe Americans pay, but he doesn't care. Again, I think he thinks the foreigners are paying for it. But then America was a protected silo up until 1913. America was able to merge as an industrial power through the protection of tariffs. So that's where he's coming back. You can see this pre-1913 approach. Then the second thing is his view of if we are losing on trade, it's unfair. So his first formula was, well, you know, if you're giving us more than we're giving you, that obviously must be unfair. I think Lu Xutu got hit pretty badly on that. And it was sort of a mathematical formula. So, but that's part of it. But then as you begin to see some other things that are happening, one is the free trade world that we've had has not been so free. And while that was acceptable for the United States for a long time, and maybe to some extent you could argue should continue to be acceptable for other benefits, was, well, why should we have zero tariffs or very low tariffs against many countries at high tariffs? Now, a lot of countries didn't have high tariffs, but there were a number of them that were putting in basically insular policies. And it's like, well, why should we allow this? And so India right now has been cited for that. So part of it was a question of, you're cheating us because, well, one, we're losing. So that's one thing. You know, when you're losing a game, you want to throw up in the air. But two, you will see in the last 10 years that there's been a push quietly amongst other countries about for tariffs in a different form. So there's a fear that when imports come in, you're being colonized. You'll see this in the tax system. So this wasn't, this was shockingly blatant, but there has been some pro-protectionist measures going on for some time. So you see a theme there. And then last is politics. He's now using
weapon. I'm going to have to break in for a sec. We have to catch up on some of our live read commercials. Otherwise, our sponsors will be very unhappy with us, and I'll get into trouble, and we'll never have this program again. So let me just do that. We'll come right back to you. Discover the delightful symphony of flavors at Friend Bakery in Sandringham. Every Friday, indulge in fresh-baked flavored challahs like za'atar, homemade, and classic loaves, all perfect for Shabbat. Try the V Friends Bakery new pretzel challah. You'll be a fan for life. For a limited time, enjoy free taster samples when you purchase your challah. Place your order easily via WhatsApp at 076-108-0085 and taste the difference that has everyone's taste buds buzzing. Visit Friends Bakery in Sandringham today and treat your taste buds to something extraordinary. That is making me hungry reading that. And our second message, which bear with us, folks, we have to do these things. They're important for you and for us. Attention, small business owners, boost your brand with an unbeatable advertising deal at this station, 101.9 Chai FM. Get 5 ads per day for 5 days for just 5,000 rand. This stimulus package campaign is perfect for businesses looking to make a splash. Don't miss out on this exclusive opportunity to reach your audience and grow your business. Interested? Email info@highfm.com or text 061-895-1019. Do it today.
High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. To put it bluntly, we don't believe that one size fits all. Certainly not when it comes to your business's affairs. Leveraging our global network of knowledge resources, we create localized solutions tailored for our clients. And as leaders in our field, we work hand in hand with you to support your business advisory, assurance, and tax needs. PKF Octagon. Right people, right size, right solutions.
Did you know Roto-Rooter, the name you've trusted for nearly 50 years, is more than just a household name? Roto-Rooter also specializes in servicing the industrial and commercial markets. With their state-of-the-art drain cleaning equipment and industry-trained professionals, they can clear any size drain, big or small, 7 days a week. So whether your household or business drains are being naughty, call 011-444-4040 or visit rotorooter.co.za and see the difference.
Need office solutions? Postnet Glen Hazel is here for you. From vibrant prints and big posters to booklets and business cards, we've got it all. Quick police clearance, credit reports and ID photos, done. Plus speedy courier service worldwide. Just email or WhatsApp us for fast, friendly help. Postnet Glen Hazel, 7 Long Avenue, Glen Hazel, where convenience meets excellence. Call us on 011-440-6189.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
We're back. We are back. This is The Deep Dive. I am Brooke Spector. My second guest today, Keith Engel of the South African Institute of Taxation. He's CEO there, and so therefore knows a fair bit about taxes. And we were talking about Donald Trump's worldview on tariffs and the way in which they are supposed to fund government. And then we moved to the question of, is the world moving away from a century-long push toward freer trade, most especially after World War II, and the Trump administration's idea that if there is a trade deficit with a country X, it's by definition unfair. Two observations there. One, that kind of calculation never seemed to include financial services or intellectual property. You can't go anywhere in the world at this point, probably on a mountain in Tibet. They're watching some American film these days. And second, it isn't necessarily a function of tariffs. I've spent years in Japan where we argued forever about phytosanitary standards of American oranges and other agricultural products. They weren't tariffs. They were simply inspections that were used perhaps politically to engineer certain kinds of trade outcomes. But Keith, you were when you started your explanation, we were trying to untangle the two halves. One was the straight question of tariffs, but the other was the way in which tariffs on South Africa products has become entangled with a whole series of geopolitical issues, disputes between the two countries. Is this now being reflected in this new 30% tariff? And just exactly when does this tariff regimen begin? I'm now a little confused again.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Look, one is the pure trade element, which I think South Africa now is coming to the table, and you know, they're offering things like, you know, the issue around the fuel, maybe there's some investment, something like that. And then there's the second, the politics. So when you're looking at it, the politics means you're going to get a higher rate if we don't like the politics. And obviously, when Ramaphosa went there with his crew, you could see that on Donald Trump's mind, the politics was sort of overwhelming him. You know, again, that's when he loved Elon Musk. Maybe things will ease up a little bit, that Elon is no longer his friend. But you can still see it. There's a lot of foreign policy anger with South Africa. And what happens there, and what you heard before, and this has been the general complaint, is that South Africa comes back with, you have to understand, we have an apartheid history, and you really need to understand. And Donald Trump is not a guy who understands. That's not really what he wants to hear. He doesn't care. So this understanding is really pretty meaningless then to him. And then, again, really what South Africa is trying to go after is trying to support, in his mind, is DEI, which he also does not like. So he's got that issue there. And what you've seen is that when South Africa cries to be non-aligned, it appears to be very much aligned with BRICS. And when they joined BRICS, and they did it quite proudly, this was an anti-American thing. This was the way it was presented to us, that this was a way of having an alternative set of geopolitical forces. So they keep pushing this dynamic. So you don't see the U.S. in any rush. And when you look in Congress and you look at the other section of the Republican Party, they're more angry about the foreign policy side. So, and also Donald Trump is a really rough negotiator. So even with his friends, you can see that they're going to get a 10% or a 15%. Look at Europe. They got a 15%. They're throwing it up. So the problem for South Africa is, when all these tariffs are going across the world, they're not going to get a better rate than the other guys who are friends. So if we're lucky, we'll come out with a 15 and we'll have to do something for it. But most likely we're on the watch list, and they most likely will show do something much higher, maybe 20, 25, 30. And the question then becomes, what can they do about it? But I do see that the rates are going to go up. And right now, I think they've fumbled around, but I don't think they're going to be able to soft speak their way through this. That seems to be quite clear, even if you're a friend of Trump's. He looks like he's on a mission on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching government statements, South African government statements that came out in the last couple of days after weeks of basically not saying anything about what it is they would do. In response to this promise of punishment, suddenly there were a couple of announcements, and I was struck by the one yesterday or just the day before, which said they're going to set up a support desk for affected industries or businesses. That sounded suspiciously like, we'll send flowers, but don't expect we can do much for you.
Well, that's right. We've done that before. I mean, this is the problem with Ramaphosa. He keeps coming up with the same strategies. So for foreign investment coming in, it's the same thing. We're going to have a presidential task force, and there'll be a special investment committee, and all these things are going to happen. And then we'll smooth the way through regulations for you. But, you know, that doesn't work. Our government just doesn't work that way. So they don't really have a plan. And then they talk about, well, we'll trade more with the other guys. You know, you can't just shift trading partners. Finding customers is not easy. And they also don't seem to understand, too, it's where these things are getting affected. So one of the things we really care about is manufacturing. So clearly the auto industry is really going to be hit. And again, it's not going to go across the board. But one of the things that South Africa has as an auto destination is Germany would rather produce its own cars inside Germany. America will produce its own car inside in America. The only way to be in South Africa is if you are a better destination in the sense of labor costs, electricity costs, and also your ability to be a hub with different countries. So to some extent, you don't know how useful German cars are being sold in America through South Africa. So if the Germans have a 50% rate and we have a higher rate, well, then Germany would rather sell them directly.
Yeah, understandably. Let me break in one last time, another commercial message, because as I say, we have to do these things. It's very important. We live in the real world. We have to do that. We have to make the sale. and we're talking about a guy who believes in making the sale.
Yeah.
Right. Limud Johannesburg is coming in 3 weeks. Tickets are selling quickly. Limud is a special event for learning, connection, and identity. You'll meet inspiring speakers and hear moving stories. There are many sessions, a big Shabbat, kosher food, and programs for children and teens. The event is from August 15 to 17 in Johannesburg, August 20 in Durban, and August 23 to 24 in Cape Town. Register now at www.limud.org.za. And Keith, let me sort of lead you to my last kind of question on this.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back for our last few minutes. We're speaking with Keith Engel of the South African Institute of Taxation. He's the CEO there. And we've been trying to dissect what appears to be a moving target, which is the tariff regimen that Donald Trump is imposing on the world and all its variations and multiple splendors. Keith, you were talking about how difficult it is really for an industry or a sector to suddenly shift gears and find new markets for products that up until yesterday had a cost comparative advantage being made here, but now suddenly may not. The question that remains, of course, is its effect on employment. And in a country where unemployment is such a crisis, losing, I've seen numbers that say 100,000 jobs, skilled jobs in agriculture and in manufacturing, is going to be a real crushing event. Is that real? Is that just talk? Or does nobody know?
Well, look, nobody really knows. I mean, to some extent, to be fair, I mean, everybody said that when Trump put in all these tariffs, the U.S. would suddenly face a surge of inflation and economic shocks. They haven't come through. But that doesn't mean they won't come through in time. And so, you know, it's not like it's going to happen tomorrow, but it starts to have an evolution. The problem that we're having is you're hitting the auto sector is always very, very sensitive. So you're going to hit that sector. You're not just going to hit it, but you're going to hit all the secondary effects. And that's the same thing with the farming sector. So it's not just the guys who are doing it. It's all the guys that are contracting to assist that begins to take an effect. Now, again, one of the questions I have is we're talking very generally. What we haven't done is make a comparison of pricing. Because, you know, a Mercedes is a Mercedes. It comes in from South Africa versus Germany. Well, how much is the additional price going to be? And could the local exporters absorb the price? They might knock down. They might cut costs. They might cut their profit margins to keep it going. So it doesn't always have to be, well, the price goes up. You do have some control. So maybe there's something that could happen there. We don't know what that percentage is. Now, we can probably tolerate a small percentage if it's in line with other countries. But if it's much larger than the other countries the U.S. is dealing with, then it's going to hit a lot harder. But the effects come over time. And again, it's also what's been going on with South Africa, and people will say, going on for over 10, 15 years. One by one, South Africa continues to face headwinds, continued headwinds. And Matt begins to say, this place is not the best place to invest, not only for foreigners, but more importantly for domestic. The domestic people are no longer investing. So
we're going to have to draw a line on it there, because I really, I'm getting urgent signals from the control booth about time, and clutching their throats and going blue and purple and all the rest. But what that really says to me, we have to have a conversation about this in about 6 months' time so that we can begin to evaluate what really happened.
That's
and
right.
How much of an effect it has been. And so we'll do that. In about 6 months' time, you and I are going to talk at length about what this has all meant rather than what it will mean. But again, I thank you for joining us at the last minute. Much appreciated. That was Keith Engel, the CEO of the South African Institute of Taxation, who has probably forgotten more about tax issues than I have ever learned. But and our first guest today was Peter Fabricius, columnist for the Daily Maverick and with the Institute for Security Studies, and a veteran journalist for many, many years. And we'll be back next week again with some other guest or guests on a topic. I don't know what it'll be yet. It might be in the arts. It might be about music or the theater, or perhaps we'll talk about it, about outer space. I haven't quite decided yet. We'll move on. You all have a good weekend. We'll be back again on Friday, 9 o'clock in the morning, and then repeated on Sunday at 10. Take care and have a good weekend.